Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 404 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 23rd of November, 2018, as I record this. So today I'm talking about plot gardening with Chris Fox. And of course, ideas on writing craft are always useful and always good to think about, gives us new ideas, whether or not you're writing fiction or nonfiction. And of course, inevitably, Chris and I end up talking about the changes at Amazon and what it means to protect our businesses for the long term. So something for everyone today. And this is a short introduction because I've already recorded next week's massive mega solo show, which will be on the 10th anniversary of me starting thecreativepen.com. So that's coming next week when I will go into my backstory, a history of the publishing changes over the last 10 years, lessons learned, questions for you, and a look forward to the next 10 years. So that's coming next week. So a quick personal update. I am really getting into the research for the next Map Walker dark fantasy book. And I've just had a big delivery of books on the Black Plague. So that is fun. And they're slightly scary, but also fascinating. And my temptation will, I'll have to avoid basically making it a techno thriller and keep it a dark fantasy book. So I'm sort of skirting the lines there, but really interesting stuff. I'm also prepping 2 weeks today. I'll be heading to New Zealand and then Australia for family visit. And so I'm basically doing all my scheduling, pre-recording things, even for January, doing all my Christmas social stuff. So essentially I've got 2 weeks till my end of year, where most people will have, I guess, like 5 weeks till end of year or something like that anyway. But I'm also still publishing the backlist in hardback and large print. So doing those publishing tasks, and also we are getting Amazon ads together. So really, I mean, as I mentioned last week, I have had them going, but we're getting a bit more serious about them based on much discussion. I am making sure I go to the cafe to do my creative work first thing. Otherwise, I would go nuts with all the admin stuff. But important part of running your own business is doing the admin and all of that type of thing, as well as the creative stuff. So thanks for all your emails and tweets this week, and quite a few people commenting on what I talked about last week again around Amazon ads and some of the stuff Mark Dawson's been sharing, and the fact that Amazon is now seemingly a pay-to-play environment and how that could actually be a positive change for those of us who are ready to embrace that change. And I'll talk a bit more about this next week, but some of the comments from people, Julie says, I appreciated your pre-show today. As you talked about the changes with Amazon, I started feeling like my ability to put a creative work in the world might be totally futile. But your ability to inform us of the changes at Amazon and in the industry and then put a positive spin on what seemed like such a dire event was empowering. So thank you. And Julie says, I feel so much more empowered today than ever before to take charge of the how, why and when of my books going into the world. I'm truly excited to go forward. And Miller also said, thank you. Your pre-show editorial was the best part of the episode. Instead of taking a doom and gloom view and spreading panic, I love how you've chosen to inspire indies to leverage our greatest advantage, our ability to spot what's on the horizon and pivot, making the necessary adjustments to sustain and grow our businesses. So thank you to Miller and Julie, and also T. Thorne Coyle, who's been on the show, who said, appreciated your thoughts on the locus of control while on a drizzly morning walk. So I'm really glad that people found that useful. And again, you know, I mentioned that feeling a bit out of control myself in the last few weeks, and then just kind of coming back to, all right, this is my business. This is my creative work. I'm going to write what I love. And then I'm going to, as ever, do exactly what we've always needed to do, which is find the right audience. And it might even be, it might even be better this way. But yes, you will have to upskill a bit. But hey, we upskill. That is what we do. We're humans. We learn. And that's fun as well. Also, what else? Amy said, listening while baking a trifecta of holiday pies. And thank you for everyone who emailed me around Thanksgiving. Of course, we don't celebrate Thanksgiving in Britain, but I always appreciate it. So thank you to everyone. And Pete also sent a picture of Max the dog, who's very cute. And Pete's sitting on the floor because Max nicked his writing chair. So that is cool. So today's show is sponsored by my own courses for writers. Yes, I have courses. thecreativepen.com/learn, which goes over to my Teachable page. And you can find my courses on how to write a novel, how to write nonfiction, content marketing for fiction, and also creative freedom, which is about building a business as an author for the long term. And in the how to write a novel course, there are a few private Facebook groups for the courses, for the bigger courses. And in the How to Write a Novel course, I started sharing about the next Matt Walker book. So I tend to share as I go along, depending on what type of book I'm writing, in those private Facebook groups. And of course, answer questions and things. I will have more courses coming in 2019, including one on productivity and possibly one on money for authors, as a lot of people have questions about that. So if you'd like to level up your writing career in 2019, come on over to thecreativepen.com/learn to find out more. And Patreon supporters get 10% off, and you have a code in your welcome email or recent email that I sent out if you're a long-term supporter. Or of course, remember, you can email me if you didn't get that, joanna@thecreativepen.com. And thanks, of course, to all the wonderful patrons, and thanks to new patrons, Joe Ruiz and Olivia Helling, and to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. As the years tick on, you guys sustain me over the long term, so I really appreciate that. You can support the show with a couple of dollars a month, and you will get 10% off the courses. You get 40 minutes extra audio every month, and I occasionally send out other stuff too. So check it out at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. And I will be doing the Q&A early for December, so get your questions in now. Right, let's get on with the interview with Chris. Today, I'm back with Chris Fox. Welcome back, Chris.
Good morning, Joanna.
I'm so glad to have you back on the show. Just in case people missed that earlier edition, Chris is the best-selling author of science fiction and dark fantasy, as well as non-fiction for authors, including Right to Market, which I know all the listeners know about, and Six Figure Author, which Chris has been on the show talking about before. And today we're going to talk about plot gardening, which is more about craft, and I know everyone loves to hear about craft, but also we're going to talk a bit about ads and about data as well, because I want to pick Chris's brain. So exciting show today. But Chris, talk about why you doubled down on craft. Why suddenly a craft book when you're known for like data and right to market?
So this was kind of always the plan for me. When I first got into the market, like every author, you've got to get a backlist of books out there so that you can actually make enough money consistently to do this. But you eventually reach a point where, in my case, I had, I think, I don't know, 12 novels out, and I was earning enough money that I could slow down and take a look at my craft. And right when I got into it, right when I put out Right to Market in February of 2016, I kicked it off with a 21-day novel challenge. And I wrote the novel Destroyer, which, you know, it sailed up to like number 200 in the store, and it did extremely well for a couple of months, and I made great money. But I got an email from another science fiction author by the name of Glenn Stewart. He's a great writer. I followed his stuff for a while, and I knew him from Cavorts for a long time. And the title of the email was The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And let's just say there was a lot of bad and ugly in the email about what he had to say about Destroyer. And none of it was wrong. None of it was, you know, incorrect. Everything he pointed out about my craft was accurate. And around the same time, I was looking at the market and I saw that two different types of books came out. You would have a series that would hang on for a couple of years and do really, really well. And like The Martian, that would spread through word of mouth and people really loved. And then you had those series that as long as you were pushing them, they did pretty well. But as soon as you stopped, they just disappeared from the public eye. Mm. And the only difference I could see between them was craft. The series that hung around had better craft. They had better characters. They had, you know, more compelling plots. They made me laugh at the right times. And I realized that craft ultimately is what's going to keep you selling in 20 or 30 years. And now that I had extra time, I decided to kind of double down and focus on that.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I do feel like the number one, accusation against the indie community, but right now it's funny because it used to be, I suppose it always was quality, but it was often quality around book covers or quality of the book. And I think now we can agree a lot of people have really good covers, but it's interesting because I don't like the word quality because it's like, well, if you're writing about whatever, what's your tagline for your science fiction ones? I love it.
There are a few different ones. Which series?
It's something in space, like your mages in space or something.
Oh, enslaved and forced to fight dragons. And it's got a picture of a guy hovering in space.
Yeah, which is cool. Yeah, dragons in space. Yeah, it's just like, that's really cool. And people think you can't write a quality crafted book with a genre premise, I guess. So maybe just, what are your thoughts on this, the quality word versus the sort of... the accusations that have been leveled, I guess, against indies.
I hate to say it, but there is some justification because if you have a great title and a great blurb and a great cover and terrible craft and you've never written a book before, you're probably going to sell a lot of copies. Mm. You may get some really bad reviews once people start reading that book, but craft is like the fourth or fifth thing that people check when they're buying a book. And so marketing is really important. So it may not even be clear to a lot of authors that they don't have the writing chops yet to produce a novel that's going to sell really well until they actually start getting it out there and getting fan reactions. Mm. But to those people who do focus on craft, the beauty of this is you can have both speed and quality. That the more you know about writing, the cleaner your first draft is going to be when you turn it out. And so if you do make craft a priority, and if you're always reading a book on craft and kind of working on that, every project that you finish is going to be better than the last one. And that continuous improvement is really going to serve you over the course of your career.
Yeah. And it's funny because I also like I'm at the moment reading aloud some short stories that I wrote in 2014. And there's a lot of passive voice. And I didn't know that those stories were actually commissioned and published. And I had an editor and everything. I didn't even realize that there were problems at that stage. Obviously, I know I'm not the world's best writer, but I feel like craft is almost an issue because with marketing, it's like, you know, there's a problem because you don't know how to do this particular thing. But often with craft, you might not even necessarily realize that there's an issue. So for me, I reckon it was around book five when I was like, oh, I'm writing quite differently now. Do you think there's a certain number of words? Is it the million words thing or what?
I feel like we're continuously leveling up. So like a year into it, I was like, wow, I'm glad I'm not making those mistakes anymore. And then you get a year further and you're like, oh my God, there's all these things I didn't know. And, you know, here I am today, 17 novels into this. And I have to wonder, what am I going to think next year? Like, what am I going to realize that I was doing incorrectly? And I don't know if there's ever a point where you stop learning and stop having those aha moments.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. I've just been doing Dan Brown's masterclass on masterclass.com, which I love. And I love Dan Brown. Obviously, he's my hero. And he talked about his first book, I think, Digital Fortress. He said it was a young book. And I actually really like those words. It's like, yeah, it's a young book. So to people listening who might be feeling like, oh no, I should just pull all my books down and rewrite them. I don't agree that's what we should do. It's almost an acknowledgement of a young book. And then your job as a writer is to grow up, I guess, and learn more.
That's a great way to put it, because you're always still proud of that book that you put out, even though it, you know, was a young book. But, you know, you can look back at it, I think, in context and say, OK, I did make some mistakes and I was maybe not as advanced a writer as I am now.
Yeah, exactly. OK, so let's get back to plot gardening. So why the gardening metaphor and how does it help authors who might resist the sort of hardcore outlining approach?
I think the architect analogy that I hear constantly never really fit with me. So I've never met an author that just makes an outline, sits down and writes the book and follows the outline. it's always some blend of creativity where maybe you'll create a character midstream that you didn't even think about, or, you know, you'll suddenly do a 90-degree turn, you know, in the plot that you didn't see coming that wasn't in your outline. It's sort of like planting tomatoes or planting corn. You know what the crop that you're aiming for is, but you can't really predict what's going to come out, and it's going to take its own form and its own shape. And while you're going to get tomatoes, you don't know how big they're going to be or what color they're going to be, you know, or how many you're going to get. So I felt like it was a better analogy, and that you preserve the creativity that you need to embed when you're writing a novel, whereas the coldly analytical, I'm just going to do an outline and that's going to be the story, scares so many authors because you feel like it chases away that creative part of you.
I like the metaphor as well. And I don't even garden, but I like the idea. I also feel that sometimes I end up with seeds of things that I've read or seen or been, and then years later, something pops up. You know, that you just didn't expect from the garden. But also, I guess you have to tend that garden or it totally goes nuts. I mean, would that be another way to look at it?
Very much so. You've got to till that soil. You've got to have, you know, guideposts for your plants to grow along. The analogy includes planter boxes. So
yeah.
Think of every novel as a different planter box, and you're sort of, you know, tending to five or six at once, maybe. So you have ideas about projects you're not even actively working on, but you're kind of, you know, tossing some seeds into those other boxes so that next year maybe you'll get to those.
Yeah. And also the other thing I've been thinking about a lot is the tending to the backlist. So I almost feel that, you know, you can get your crop and then eat that crop now, but unless you're kind of looking after your backlist of books as well, because I feel like a lot of people are sort of racing into the next book all the time. You know, I agree with you that speed and quality don't, there's no, you know, relationship as such, but the constant pushing out of new books feels like that's not necessarily the way that's going to make a long-term successful career.
Yeah, in gardening terms, sometimes a farmer will need to let their field lie fallow for a while. And I think most authors need to do that. So not all of them. I do know some, you know, authors like Amanda Lee who just continuously crank out content and never seem to need to stop. But a lot of us, you know, we got to take a season off and watch some documentaries and go, you know, play some video games if that's our thing, or read some books or watch some Netflix and recharge and sort of refill that creative well.
Yeah, that's certainly what I feel. Plus, I feel that that's the really, I find the research, for example, the planting of seeds, a really enjoyable part of the process. So that's something I'm going to definitely keep doing. So I wanted to ask about conflict, because you have a lot of great chapters in the book about craft, but I feel like the conflict one is interesting because you write genre fiction, and I also write genre fiction as well. And so some people will think that conflict means exploding spaceships or fight scenes, you know, with fists or knives or guns. But it doesn't mean that, does it? So can you give some tips on writing conflict that will keep a reader engaged?
Sure. This was a big light bulb moment for me. So like many authors, you know, you hear, oh, we've got to have conflict in there. But just having, you know, somebody walk up and punch your character in the face is conflict. But if it's not rooted in the story, it's just going to confuse your reader and they're not going to be emotionally invested. All conflict that pulls reader in is in some way tied to that plot, to the stakes, to what's going to happen between your protagonist and your antagonist. You know, your antagonist wants something and your protagonist wants something. And the conflict arises from the fact that they can't both have that thing. And in science fiction, most of that conflict tends to be physical. You know, you've got dragons tearing apart starships or you know, robots punching each other. But almost all types of fiction, and this includes science fiction, have other types. And I didn't understand this until maybe a few years ago. There's also psychological conflict. So maybe your character is afraid of certain things and they're having to face those fears and overcome them. There is social conflict. Maybe they are fighting against society and certain norms that exist that they're being penalized for because they're maybe coming from an underclass. And then there are moral flaws. Maybe they're in a position where they have an opportunity to do something that goes against their morals, but will benefit them. And we as the reader want to know, how does that conflict resolve? Do they do the right thing? And you can continuously ratchet up the stakes around any of these decisions. So the example that I use in the book is maybe you've got a main character who it has fallen on hard financial times. And you can show that by saying, okay, their mortgage is three payments behind. And then you can also show maybe their spouse is sick and so they need to get money to pay for that. only then do you put them in a situation where their morals are tested. So maybe they're at work and they have to do the right thing and blow the whistle, even though it's going to cost them their job. And as the reader, by the time the character gets to this scene, you know, oh no, their wife is going to be, you know, in rough straits because they can't afford the medicine and their mortgage is behind. You care a lot more because it's rooted in the story.
Yeah, I think you're right. And actually that internal conflict can be very powerful. And in fact, this is not a political show, as I say, but what's interesting in the world we are living in right now in 2018, here in Britain and in America particularly, we have a lot of conflict within a country that is almost a sort of moral conflict, societal conflict, you know, that in any other old generation, like 100 years ago, would have been like a civil war, but we're actually doing it online. You know, it's so interesting how this internal conflict doesn't necessarily mean physical attack, you know, or even physical death. It can be, you know, the death of some things you care about, like the European Union.
Yeah, or maybe the death of your old self, the person that you thought that you were at the beginning of the story.
Yeah, it's so important. So I think that, and you also mentioned emotion, because I think I noticed more and more, in fact, my husband and I were talking about Pixar and about, you know, when you're starting a story, do you start with character or do you start with plot? You know, do you start with the emotional resonance you want to leave people with? So how do we incorporate that emotional resonance into our books so that, like you mentioned, this customer loyalty, reader loyalty to your book because of the way they feel over the long term?
I think it begins with thinking like a reader. You need to understand who is reading your books and why they're reading your books. So if you are a romance reader, you are probably seeking a very different emotional resonance than if you were a horror reader or even, you know, an epic fantasy reader. Everybody's looking for different things and you need to understand what those things are. And usually you could begin that process just by looking at yourself, because odds are good that as an author, you're probably also a reader of some type, and hopefully you read the same genre that you write in. So in my case, epic fantasy was my big genre of choice when I was a kid. And you know, I'll try and make the story fast. I was, and I'm putting this in air quotes for audio listeners, I was kidnapped by my mom at age 8. So my brother and I, she lost a custody battle for us. And she decided, you know what, I'm not going to obey the courts. And she took us and we kind of lived on the run for like a year. And I went by my middle name and so did my brother. So I became Todd and he became Alex. But the takeaway from writing is that I felt very unstable. You know, I didn't know what school I was going to be in the next week. My life was changing constantly. And so I discovered Narnia and I discovered Lord of the Rings. And I found all these series where the protagonist was a young man who had no control over his own life, but through the course of the story, gained that control and became powerful enough to make their own decisions and to affect the world around them. And so as I aged as an adult, I realized that's the emotional resonance I was seeking, because I could get the certainty that I was in control by reading these books. Mm. Well, as an author, you want to look at what is my audience getting from this, and then you want to craft an emotional experience that's going to kind of satisfy the things that those people are looking for.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it. And it's funny, I think the themes of our fiction repeat over and over again in our books, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. You might write a different story or a different character, but those themes that you care about always come back over and over again. And it's funny, the type of dark stuff I write and I read with horror is always bad stuff happens, but good will win, or someone will survive, or, you know, the monster is defeated. It's not about the horror, it's about defeating the monster, good killing evil. And that's in all my books. It's so funny, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, so that emotion and that theme, I think.
Yeah, and that's why I read, you know, books like yours. I love thrillers, because you are going to see bad things happen to good people. But I have that knowledge going in that the good people are probably going to triumph in the end. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. It's going to be a struggle, but they'll win.
Yeah, and the fun thing is how they're going to win, not if they're going to win. Excellent. Okay, so let's come on to writing fast. We've talked about it a bit, but you are also famous for the book 5,000 words per hour. And you do have some good book titles, Chris. I mean, you know, 5,000 words an hour, everyone's like, yay, I want that. So, we talk about the importance of spending time world building. And I thought it was interesting in your book, especially with fantasy. How do you balance going deep into world building and all of the things we've talked about, as well as getting your words done?
So I tend to separate the activities entirely. My writing is done in usually a 2 to 3 hour block in the morning. And I do writing sprints and I just kind of am cranking out chapters that I've already plotted. And then after that work is done for the day, I get to do the fun stuff. And for me, the fun stuff is world building. I love thinking about characters in my next novel, and I'll watch a documentary and think, ooh, I could do a character like this or a locale like that. And so I'll create a document and toss it into whatever appropriate Scrivener document I've got. And I typically am world building for like 3 or 4 novels at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I am doing that 5,000 words an hour, and I'm, you know, working as hard as I can every day to get that down. But then in the background, I'm also world building on the side. And I recommend as an author that if you can, you silo these activities. So you allocate some time to world building. And if that's hard for you, if you don't like world building, maybe you try and do that first. Some authors do find the natural flow state of writing a little easier, although most people that I talk to tend to find that difficult and find world building a little easier. So pick whichever one you like the best, make that the reward, the icing on the cake, and do that afterwards, and then try to take care of both activities separately. And that's worked pretty well for me.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm just writing the second book in my Matt Walker fantasy series, and that's got a magic system. And I'd never had a magic system before. So it's really interesting to, you know, that is actually something if you don't sort it out early, you're going to have to do some editing later because, you know, substantial editing around who can do what. So I agree with you. So also with segregation, so one of the ways I segregate my time is the creative stuff is completely separate to the marketing. So I do want to come on to marketing because as we talked about in our first interview, you've come out of the data world, the IT world, apps, Silicon Valley type space. So you're very comfortable with data. And things have really changed with Amazon. As we speak in November 2018, there's been a real shift in the environment. So I wonder if you would perhaps comment on what you think has happened. Are we in a pay-to-play environment? What does that mean for authors?
So this sort of change happens fairly frequently. But this time I am a little more concerned than I have been in some of the past changes that Amazon has made. And they are removing real estate, I think, that we're used to having as authors. But it's not the first time we've seen it. You know, you remember back in 2013, 2014 with Facebook, where we used to be able to reach our entire audience. You'd make a post and they'd all see it. And now, of course, we have to pay to boost posts. So things are getting more expensive. We are having to put more money into advertising. But that's expected. And there is still tons of profit on the table. And I guess the positive takeaway is there's more readers than ever. I see more and more people in Kindle Unlimited. I see more and more authors getting into the game. And yet it seems like since it's not a zero-sum game, a lot of us can still continue to make a living. So as an author, if you're struggling now because those also bots are gone and you were using that as a kind of a primary vehicle to get your book out there, you're going to have to make up that shortfall through advertising. But if you do it well, as a brand new author, you can still run a couple of $5 a day ads, be it through Facebook or through Amazon, and get some attention on your book. And Amazon is still happy to use their book recommendation engine to send out mailers on your behalf or to show their customers that your book exists, because all they want to do is sell things. And this really is just one less tool that we have.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like there has been this change where before I feel like a brand new author could come into the indie space, upload a book, and some copies would sell. And I don't think we're there anymore. Like, I literally think you can't just upload a book and expect it to sell. But then part of me also wonders whether that ever happened. I never made loads of money without, you have to push it in some way. So I know some people will be worried about this. So can you encourage people, I guess, in terms of, like you mentioned, the $5 a day, should they just try a $5 a day on Amazon ads, for example, because that's probably the easiest?
That would be my suggestion. At this point, really what you need to focus on is your cover and the marketing copy that you're using. And that's going to be, I think, far more value than any amount of money that you put into advertising. So if you're experimenting with taglines and, you know, you're making sure that your covers are really evocative and so are the titles, then just a little bit of money into advertising is going to get you some visibility. And if you are nailing everything, Amazon really still can do the rest for you and your book can float right up to the top.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I actually think, again, I mean, indies can react fast to a changing environment. And I almost worry more for those traditionally published authors who have the no advance contracts where the publisher won't have any ad spend. You know, I see so many indies doing ads, but traditional publishing, it's mainly the big names, right? So is the mid-list going to suffer in traditional publishing because of this change?
I think maybe so. The advantage that they have is that they are able to sell in a format that we don't dominate at all. And that's physical books, which are still huge. So in that regard, I suspect they can still advertise and maybe make some headway because we're not, you know, taking up shelf space in most bookstores. And, you know, we're not supplying libraries and really fulfilling that need. So maybe they still have an advantage in that regard. But yeah, as far as ebooks go, we are eating their lunch for a reason. We can react instantly. We can dump as much ad spend as we want. And as an author, I know if I spend X number of dollars and I make X amount of profit, it's all going into my pocket minus the 30% cut I'm giving to Amazon.
Well, it's interesting you say that because about 6 months ago, I decided, probably a year ago when I went into Ingram Spark, I decided to start focusing on print sales. And my print revenue now is 21% of my book sales income.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, and now I'm putting all my backlist into hardback, large print, which libraries are far more likely to buy. And also, you know, just sell for higher prices. And so I actually think the print market share, it's also much cheaper to advertise print books because there aren't so many authors doing it. So I'm actually finding, and children's authors, I've had Karen Inglis on the show, advertising print books for children is going really well. So I actually think what we're going to see is a market share of print sold online going to indies.
I could definitely see that as we start doing it more and doing it better. I'm certainly seeing the same thing in audio. Probably 40% of my sales these days are audio, and it's growing so fast.
That's interesting. On audio, how long are your books?
They vary, but the most successful ones, I have a box set that's 25 hours and I have another one that's 41 hours. And as you know, getting the same book for one credit, people want those big deals where they get a ton of hours of entertainment. And so the series that are based off of those two do enormously well.
Yes. And that's what I've said before on this show is nonfiction audio can be short and will still sell. Mm-hmm. But fiction audio is really hard to sell when it doesn't go over that credit. So box sets are brilliant. And again, you don't see many traditional publishers doing that. So we've got an advantage there too, I think. Are you doing anything differently with advertising audio?
Not a ton. I use a fair number of Facebook ads for the longer box sets. And it's really straightforward. You just put, you know, in your ad, likes Audible, and then likes whatever your audience is. So it's super easy to zero in on those niches that might buy your audiobooks. And then it's as simple as, hey, I've got this book that's X number of hours long. And that does all the selling.
It's so funny you say that because my husband, he pretty much only buys these fantasy books when they're like 40 hours plus. So I see exactly what he's one of those customers.
He is my target audience.
He totally is. So that's talking a bit about ads, and I'm glad we agree. Generally we're positive people and we see these shifts as inevitable. That's the other thing. I worked in tech and you've worked in tech. I mean, nothing stays the same, right? It changes super fast. You have to.
It's always evolving and changing, and we have to adapt as authors. But if you keep doing the work, I mean, the money's going to continue to be there for the rest of our lives, I think.
Yes. And that's what I meant about the backlist and tending that backlist, because when you master some of these things, it does compound. So, you know, if you keep putting, and inevitably in 3 years' time, things will be different again, or 1 year time or a month's time, given how fast things are changing right now. But I did want to ask you also, because you mentioned this and I've been talking about this a lot. You've said in the book, quote, there's going to be an explosion of content in the next decade. And I'm listening to AI Superpowers right now, which is about China. And I saw China Literature at London Book Fair, and they've recently translated a book in 30 seconds, 100,000 words, 30 seconds translated. And so I agree with you. I think there's going to be this explosion of content. So how do we compete in that market and look into that future, protecting, we're about the same age, I think, you know, protecting our next 50 years, for example?
I think that content marketing is the wave of the future. And when I say content marketing, I don't just mean a reader magnet, and I don't just mean lots of good books. I mean understanding what your audience is into. In my case, my audience is people that grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons, and then they graduated into video games like EverQuest and World of Warcraft and Diablo. And there's millions of these people globally. And what they're looking for is something that they can't get just from looking at a book. And they like to play these role-playing games. And so what I've done is I've paid many thousands of dollars to get some amazing artwork. And I've actually created a pen and paper role-playing game like Dungeons and Dragons that I give out free.
Wow.
So we play tested this for the first time in Las Vegas recently with some other sci-fi authors, and it's working pretty well. And when my fans saw this, they just started going nuts because they want to get their hands on this game. They want to be able to make their own tech mages just like I have in the book. It's understanding what my audience is interested in and then giving them something that they can come together as a community around. They can start having their own adventures. They can chat on the boards that I've created for them. So I've given them a place where they can share their love of this thing that I've created. I think those communities are going to be vital going forward. And so as an author, it doesn't really matter what genre you're in, from romance to mystery. If you can create a community and you can start providing things to your readership that they're not getting elsewhere, then they're going to stick with you and they're going to be happy to do so. And those are the authors that are still going to be selling books, I think, in 20 years.
And it's funny, I did not pay you or tell you to say that, because it's so funny. This is exactly what I've been saying. And in fact, I just released like a week ago, a mini course on content marketing for fiction, which is exactly what you just said. So totally separately, we've been thinking about that. And I agree with you. I feel like the paid ad stuff is, it's the short term. It's, you know, getting people into our space and selling actual books. But the content marketing is that longer term, and coming right back to the plot gardening and the craft. That's the thing that's going to keep people for the long term, is a community, like you say.
Exactly. If you can write better books and you can get your fans together in a place where they can geek out, then you know, you're going to have success.
You are. Wow. Okay, that's awesome. So finally, just before we finish, you've got a new version of Right to Market coming out soon. So what makes this edition different? Why should people check that out?
I would say like the 30-second thumbnail version is that the first version of Right to Market really covered writing to trend really, really well. But I didn't explain that there are other types of writing to market. Writing to market is as simple as you need to understand what a given market is interested in. And if you give them something written to trend, if other people are writing vampires and you turn out, you know, and synthesize a good vampire book, you're probably going to make some money. But there's a lot more money often in exploiting areas that haven't been discovered yet. So when I did space fantasy, there was no market of books with dragons and gods that I was reading, trying to figure out, okay, this is what I need to do. I pretty much invented this from scratch. I came up with all my own ideas, but I did it with an understanding of these are the emotional needs of my audience, and I think I can satisfy them in this way. So it's bigger risk, bigger reward. And the new version of the book is going to get a lot more into how to understand your audience and how to give them what you think they want.
Sounds awesome. So where can people find you and your books online?
ChrisFoxWrites.com is my main hub. If you are into videos, YouTube.com/ChrisFoxWrites. Got a couple hundred plotting and marketing videos.
Yeah, it's great. And you definitely do the YouTube really well. So I appreciate that. So thanks so much for your time, Chris. That was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joanna.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Chris today and have lots of ideas about plot and conflict, and also some thoughts on marketing as well. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, next week is my mega solo show, 10 years of the Creative Pen. I can't believe it, really. And that's thecreativepen.com. The podcast 10-year anniversary is next March, so I will be doing another 10-year show in March. But I'll be talking about my lessons learned. I also take a look back at the last 10 years and the changes that have gone on. For example, when I started self-publishing, there wasn't even the ability for international authors to publish on KDP. So, if you are thinking it's hard now, it was a lot harder. And we now have a lot more opportunities. So lots for you to think about next week. So happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.